So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Ian.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Esme, and thank you for organising such a day. It's very, very impressive to see so many of you at such short notice. Okay, so what I'd like to do is to outline the day for you, but first of all to explain the title, because what I will be doing is, first of all, can you hear me at the back?
Yeah.
Excellent. What I'm going to do is to introduce you to complexity theory in order to help you address very difficult, complex problems. I call them apparently intractable because they appear to be intractable because of the way they're addressed. So I hope that we will today perhaps start seeing a different way of addressing these complex problems that will actually help you in practice. Oh, for a moment I had frozen. So this is how we're going to have the day. I will ask you all to introduce yourselves very, very briefly. Can you say who you are? And then briefly, why are you here today? There are an awful lot of us, so I would ask you please to be very brief, but it would be good to hear why you have made the effort to be here today. We will then, I need to ask you, what does complexity mean to you before I actually start introducing the theory? Because I need to hear what is it that you think about it. I will introduce the theory in the morning in three groups of principles, because it's an awful lot to take in. You will not be able to absorb it all. So the way that I like to do it is to give you a cluster of principles, then ask you to do a short exercise to actually identify some practical examples that illustrate the principles that I've just introduced you to. And then I will ask each table to just give us one interesting example. And then, before lunch, Esme will say a little about the topics that she thinks are worth discussing this afternoon. Yeah? Now, if those topics are not the ones you want to discuss, that's absolutely fine. There are plain flip charts, and you can go and choose another flip chart and write the topic you want to discuss. All you need to do is persuade two other people to come and discuss it with you. But I'll go through that again this afternoon. We will have quite a lot of time this afternoon to go through those challenges, because I will ask you to first of all identify the challenges. What keeps you awake at night? How have you tried to address them? What are the strengths and weaknesses of that approach? And then, what difference would it make if you start applying complexity theory? And then come back and discuss it with the rest of us. So when we come back, and we'll have quite a bit of time at the end of the day for you per group to come back and outline these challenges and your approach to them. It's not going to be just a discussion with me. It will be a discussion with everyone, because what I usually find is that your colleagues actually are the ones that are going to give you the deeper insights. So that's the plan for the day. Some rather concentrated theory, but then we're going to put it into practice. So you need to be a little patient in the morning. So these are the clusters that we will talk about. Now, these are some of the characteristics of complex systems. This is not an exhaustive list. There are a lot more, but these are the ones that I find very useful to talk about, think about in terms of organizations. So there will be a lot more, and I will expect you, in fact, to... where's the plain one? Here. But before we do that, I I would like you to just tell me what complexity means to you. So just throw away a word or a phrase out, please.
Difficult.
Difficult, right?
Headache. Headache.
Headache.
Unexpected consequences.
Unexpected consequences, that's good, yes. Actually, I'm going to ask Esme, can you come and help with the right? Oh yeah. And then remove it from the
faster.
Right. Sorry, I said Esme and I looked at Sharon. No wonder she looked totally confused. Right, okay. Anything else?
Risk.
Risk, very much so, yes.
And trust.
Trust. Okay.
Challenging.
Many moving parts.
Okay. Actually, Sharon, I will ask you because we can have two and then we can go even a little faster.
I need shorthand.
Multi-layered, Esme.
Creative, that's good, yeah. Okay. Any more?
Multi-layered.
Pardon?
Multi-layered.
Multi-layered, that's excellent, yes. Okay, so. Any more?
Uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, right?
Opportunity.
Opportunity.
Interdependency.
Good. Interdependent.
Conflict.
Sorry, what?
Conflict.
Conflict. Good. Very good. Conflict. Okay. Any more?
Unexpected events.
Yes, unexpected events. I think that's good. Yeah. Any more?
Duplication.
Duplication. Interesting. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, we both.
No. Duplication. Yeah. Yeah. That you have been exactly right. Okay.
Multiplication.
Right. Okay. I think we're beginning to get the idea here, and I think some of these are actually will pick up as we go along. That's great. Thank you, ladies. Thank you very much. Okay. As I said, we need to look at them in a methodical way. But one of the things I'd like to do is, first of all, put them in the context that we are talking about systems whose behavior is nonlinear and whose behavior tends to be unpredictable. And the reason for that, why it's unpredictable, I hope will gradually become clear. Now, I also have been told that a lot of you are very familiar with systems theory. Is that correct? Can I have an indication? If I say systems theory, who would understand what I'm talking about? Good. Excellent. Lovely. Okay. In that case, what I want to do is actually to explain where systems theory fits in. Because for those of you who are familiar with it, I think it will help you to build on those ideas. So the first three bullet points, which is connectivity and interdependence, emergence and feedback, are characteristics that were identified as part of systems theory. In fact, an awful lot is written on emergence in terms of complexity, which is very much part of a complex system, but in fact, it had already been identified as a characteristic of systems theory. But it is all the others that were then identified as those that are make a difference in terms of being a complex system. And as I said, you're probably still wondering, what on earth is a complex system? Well, I hope, as I said, as we're going through, that will become clear. If it doesn't, then please come back and say. Now, I will tell you what the key difference is, and then I will keep repeating it during the day until it becomes clearer. One significant difference between a complex system in a complicated system, a machine type system, a system that simply has many parts interacting. Because having many parts interacting does not necessarily make a complex system, it makes a complicated system. The difference is that a complex system can create, in the terms used, new order. In other words, it can create something new. It can create a new way of working, it can create a new way of new behaviors, etc., etc. So it's the creation of new order is what distinguishes complex from complicated systems. So a very complicated jet engine, in this definition, is not complex. It's merely complicated. And we can the behavior of a complicated system while we cannot predict the behavior of a complex system. All your organizations are complex. All human organizations are complex. So we're starting from that premise. Okay, so to begin with, it is connectivity that creates complex behavior. It is how we connect, how we interact with each other, how the decisions and actions we take actually create that complex behavior. At any point, if we just take two of us, I take a decision or an action, you need to respond, and at every point you have options. And because you have those options, after a few interactions, we cannot predict the outcome because both of us have options at every point where we make a decision or take an action. And I think that is important to understand. Now, we think of connectivity as a simple relationship, but it isn't simple because there are degrees of connectivity, and you will sometimes hear of it as strength of coupling. In other words, how strong is that relationship? And it doesn't mean that it is the same over time between two individuals, because it can vary. I mean, think of any of your relationships, either personal or work. Over time, that strength of connectivity will alter, will change. And again, we need to consider that. Another interesting idea, which is beginning now to bring in some ideas from complexity theory to add to systems, is this idea of static interactions. Now, what does that mean? Think of when you are recruiting a new member of your team. You've looked at the candidates, all their CVs, and you've chosen someone on the strength of their CV, the strength of their interview, etc. And you have set an expectation of the contribution that the individual is going to make to the team. Now, when that person becomes a member of the team, they can fulfill those expectations. Sometimes they don't, and sometimes they go over your expectations. Now, what's the reason for that? Any ideas? What makes the difference as to that contribution that individual makes to the team to be different?
The team itself.
The team itself.
Interaction,
exactly. It is the team itself. It is how that environment, that team, can actually help that individual to either contribute fully or not. So let's go back to the definition. Is the fitness contribution made by one individual will depend upon the related individuals. I think that is very, very important. So we begin to see context, relationships, dependence, etc., already taking shape. So connectivity, as I said, is not a simple relation. It varies in terms of diversity, density, intensity, quality of interactions, which will determine the network of relationships. And one interesting thing is that intense interconnectivity creates multiple and intricate dependencies, And the point here is that they cannot be pulled apart. Once we have intricate interdependency, you cannot go back and actually draw a line to identify how those dependencies either started or take them clearly back to their source. Is anyone here involved with IT systems? Okay, well, you will know more than anybody else that when you have a large IT system and you make a change in one part, sometimes you are not certain of what will happen in some other part of the system. Have you had that experience? That's because of the intricate interdependencies you have that have been created in the system that you can simply not follow through. Can you give us an example?
Off the top of my head, fairly difficult, but as you generally, I mean, that does happen. I mean, they are complex, and you make, everybody here must appreciate it, really.
Exactly.
As users, you make one change which you think is going to be simple, and it causes chaos somewhere else later on.
Precisely. That's the whole point, and you've just described it very well indeed. However, we talk about connectivity, but complexity theory does not say you have to keep on increasing connectivity, because ultimately we get what is called complexity catastrophe. Now think about it. If you are in a team of, say, only 10, and everyone sends an email to every 10 members for every single interaction, how very, very quickly your inbox is going to get filled up, and you cannot possibly take in all that information. So increasing connectivity all the time, as I said, is not a necessary condition. This brings us into some ideas from network theory, where a network is thought of in terms of loose and strong coupling. In other words, there are certain times where a network needs to be tightly coupled so that you need very good interaction with your colleagues when you are focusing on a specific task, but that doesn't mean that that intensity is going to carry over forever. When that task is over, then that relationship becomes less intense. So we change now to emergence. Now, forget that. Can anyone tell me anything about, I mean, if we use the word emergence, what does it mean to you? What is emergence?
Beginning?
Beginning? Anything else?
New?
Yeah.
Something that's arisen but wasn't necessarily
developing?
Created.
Creative?
No, something that's arisen but wasn't necessarily created.
Very interesting. Yes, thank you. Anything else? Okay, I think that's very good. Through the interaction, we get properties that arise that are not predictable. As we explained earlier, because of the options that we have, because of the non-linearity, there could be ideas, insights, ways of doing things that through that interaction emerge that would not at the outset be predictable. In order to think about that, is that this idea, this property of emergence is a systemic property. In other words, it comes from the interaction of a system. And a system in this case could be a small group. If you have been part of a group doing some brainstorming in particular, you would have seen that very clearly. If you were to take the individuals in that group and isolate them in separate rooms and ask them to work in isolation, you would not get the same ideas as you would by the group working together. It is that interaction, that constant triggering off of ideas, and I think we've all felt that when somebody said something and suddenly a new insight has come into our head. It is that interaction creating something as part of a group. So it's a systemic property that is part of what is emergent. So it's not cumulative. We cannot add John's and Jean's and Mark's and so ideas and come to the new emergent idea. It comes as a product of the interaction of the group working together. And we can say that it's more than the sum of the parts. In complexity language, it is the transition from what we call micro-agent interaction. I'm only throwing these out in case you happen to be interested, but you can ignore them. What this really means, micro-agents in human systems are individuals. We all are micro-agents in this case. So it is individuals interacting to create something that is at the next micro level that is beyond the individuals themselves. So learning, culture, innovation are emergent properties. The other interesting thing is to distinguish them between being emergent and being designed. People talk about designing a culture or actually setting up a process for innovation and so on. I would suggest that it is something more than that. Yes, you need some kind, perhaps, of framework of infrastructure, but it is more how does the is the environment created to allow for that property to emerge in the truest sense, because then it will be really creative. It will be really innovative. If we try to control it too much, it's going to be more or less a predictable outcome. If we want the really creative insights, we need to let go of that control, but create the right environment, the right support, the right infrastructure to actually help it to take place. Okay, now, if you read most texts on complexity and on emergence, this is the half of the story you will be told, but there's another half to the story which is makes it even more dynamic and interesting. Okay, so we call that the bottom-up or the micro-to-macro process. There is another one. Once you create a particular culture as an emergent property, the emergent, the culture, does two things. First of all, it constrains certain behaviors. So people who are part of an organization, part of that culture, there are things they would not dream of doing. At the same time, because they are a member of that organization, there are options, possibilities open to them they would not have as an individual. So as a member of the London School of Economics, I can go the other side of the world. Nobody's heard of me. But if I say I'm from the LSE, they will actually, you know, it opens doors for me, which as an individual it would not do. And it's the same for all of you as members of your organization. And at the same time, as I said, there are certain constraints. There are things that I would not do because I am a member of that institution. So it is, if you think about it, we begin to have a very dynamic process. We have the micro to macro, through interaction, creating these new dynamic properties. But once they're created, they both constrain and open up new possibilities. And of course, it is not static. That very process then creates new interactions. So a culture is never a static thing. It is constantly evolving and co-evolving and we will come to co-evolution in a moment. So it is a very, very dynamic process. Now, I am giving you some references there because at the end, and those of you who are interested to find out more about the principles I'm talking about, Esme can send you a copy of a chapter in a book I have edited to see those principles more in depth. However, that was done in 2003, and that's a long time ago. So the ones I'm adding are ones that are additional to the chapter, and at the end of the presentation you have the full references. So, and you've got them in front of you, and that's the point of the references when they appear. The other thing is that emergent processes can be ephemeral, and it is, as I said, they're constantly evolving and co-evolving, so they don't stand still. And we can have some interesting discussions about circular or reciprocal causality if we have time later on. But we'll carry on now. The next principle I want to talk about is self-organization. So now we are beginning to go into complexity proper. So what is self-organization? If a group in an organization sees something that needs to be done, and two or three people get together, they decide what to do, how to do it, when to do it. That's pure self-organization. No one outside that group has directed them and told them, you three, go away and think about this and do something about it. They have seen the need, they have chosen to get together, and they're doing something about it. Now, Stacy and Macmillan, that's Ralph Stacy and Elizabeth Macmillan, have defined it as is a process whereby a number of individual agents spontaneously, that's key, get together and cooperate in a coordinated way while at the same time sharing common behaviors. Now, this idea of spontaneity is absolutely key. So the group is not directed or designed by someone outside the group, and the group decides what needs to be done, how, when. And of course, again, this is a wonderful source of innovation. So when organizations come and tell me, we really, really want to be very innovative, and then we go and look at them, and they are constraining self-organization, I'm not surprised that they are not very innovative. So it's not that we can't stop it, but we can slow it down. We can constrain it. We can inhibit it. None of this can be stopped, but they can either be accelerated and facilitated, or they can be inhibited and slowed down. Okay, now I thought you might be interested to see a distinction between self-managed and empowered teams and self-organized teams, because that question keeps coming up. You can have a look at all the points later. I just want to pick up the ones that are underlined. So a self-managed or empowered team is part of the formal structure. It is not spontaneously formed because someone has actually said, you, and you. It is steered by senior management, and the order is achieved via specific processes. A true self-organized team is not part of the formal structure. It is spontaneously formed. The team members decide, and inherent order emerges. There is no specific process for doing it. Macmillan has written extensively on the distinction. Okay, this is your first discussion. So, can you please identify examples of self-organization and emergence? Please discuss it as a group around your tables, and then choose one example to share with the rest of us. And the next point is very important. How can self-organization and emergence be facilitated and constrained? As I said, we can't stop it, but we can either help it or we can make it more difficult. So, about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then come back. And if you quickly want a little break or whatever, now is a good time.
Some food.
Yeah,